Hello, Davis. How you doing out there? I hope you're having a wonderful day. I certainly am. It's a Thursday. It's a 1 o'clock. I'm on the radio. My name's Lois Richter, and the program is called That's Life, and I frequently interview people about, their work, their lives, some event they've been to, some travel they've done, something good. And sometimes it's well-known folks, city council member or senator or something, and sometimes it's just folks that I happen to run into, and I talk them into coming on my show. And that's what we have today. Tyler Lee, hello.
Hello.
And Tyler is someone who I met before my show one day. I come in a little bit early, and I was sitting in the conference room having lunch, and there was a fellow who was alphabetizing the labels, the records in there, and and then there was a fellow sitting there reading or doing a computer or something like that, and we got to chatting, and that's Tyler. And so I said, hey, you want to come be on my show? And he said, okay. So I got to ask you,
okay,
why are you in Davis? Is this your normal place? Are you a student, or did you grow up here? Did you just get here yesterday? What's your talk?
I live in Davis. Live here, work here. Moved here about a year and a half ago.
So that's 2017.
Yeah, so not this summer, but last summer.
Well, we are taping this show on January of 2019, but you never know when it's going to be aired, so I'll say dates. Okay, so you got here. And why'd you come?
Oh, wait, so this show's not airing?
We're live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anything you say is going right out over the airwaves. Yeah. And then we'll archive it. Anybody can listen to old shows. You go to kdrt.org, look at the schedule, and click the show, and you'll come to the list of archives. The music shows are archived for 2 weeks, and then the talk shows are archived, basically indefinitely.
Okay.
So that's it.
Yeah.
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 So back to you.
Yeah.
So you came to Davis.
Yes.
And why did you come?
I don't know why I came to Davis, actually. If I were to just sum it up, I would basically say for a new start. Like a new start, a new life in a new place. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're here, but I'm always curious how people pick that spot. It probably weren't driving down the car and it broke down and that's where you stayed. I mean, that's what happened a lot of times in the Midwest.
Really?
Yeah. You talk to people there, and how did their family get there? Well, they were going along, and they had some car trouble, and it was a nice little town, so they just they're figuring they were going to go someplace they didn't know where.
And their just car just broke down.
That's where they ended up.
And what decade would this happen?
Probably in the early 1900s.
Early 1900s.
Well, there had to have been cars, so that would be after 1910, right?
Yeah.
That's where the first car was, 1910, something like that, I think.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I drove my car up here.
But it didn't break down.
It did not break down, thankfully. For my current job, I do need my car. So. But I don't know. It's kind of so. I grew up in LA, or more specifically, North Orange County. Grew up there. Went to school in San Diego.
UC.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it was post college, so I actually dropped out of college. I moved back home.
Okay.
And it was around. So yeah, about a year and a half ago, and I kind of just didn't want to be at home anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you've got to get out. I mean, you grow up.
Yeah.
You got to move away.
Yeah, and so I didn't want to be in LA. I didn't want to go back to San Diego either. So
were you looking for a place with college?
So that did play into it. I was very familiar with the UC system, you just mentioned, and I was able to find housing up here through the Facebook housing pages through the colleges. So I just Facebook searched UC Davis housing page.
Cool.
And I was able to find a 3-month summer sublease. And I kind of just signed away and I moved up here with like $2,000.
Try it out for 3 months, account. See exactly. if you like it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and yeah. I figured, well, before that, you know, I obviously didn't, I didn't really consider Davis as my first option. Like, mm-hmm. but then, you know, I was like, oh, it would be cool to move to the Bay Area or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm broke. Mm-hmm. I'm broke. So I crossed that out. Mm-hmm.
Davis is expensive, but not as expensive as San Francisco. There's also very little housing left in Davis, but still there's lots more than San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And then, you know, Sacramento, I didn't really have a great impression on. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, you know, Davis is right in the middle of those mm-hmm. two cities. Mm-hmm. I've already done Southern California. So I'll move up here, give it 3 months. If anything, it's located in between those two major cities, mm-hmm. San Francisco and Sacramento.
So if you don't like it, you can have easy access to checking out the other places.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I signed a 3 month summer sublease, around June, and then it ended up working out, you know. Mm-hmm. It was really weird at first being here.
Davis is a very small place compared yeah. to either of those other cities, because it's not a city. It's a large town. I guess you'd say it's a small city. 60,000 people.
Yeah.
But that's still, it doesn't feel big to me.
Yeah, it's not big at all. Because I used to live on, when I first moved here, I lived on Covellan Lake, which is on mm-hmm. the very west side. Mm-hmm. And I remember like the first day that I moved here, I just searched like Target or Walmart. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, there's a Target in town.
So, all the way on the other side of town.
Exactly. So I just drove on Covell, mm-hmm. right? Just from the west all the way down Covell, you go.
All the way around the edge exactly. of the city, looking at mostly ag land, going, what the heck have I got myself into?
Exactly. I was so scared. Like mm-hmm. at that moment, I was like, this is it. Mm-hmm. Like I'm so used to, you know, just cities, neighboring cities. And mm-hmm. all you see is a sign that says, welcome to the next city. But right. you can't really tell. They don't look different.
That's right.
So yeah, I was really scared. I was like, okay, here mm-hmm. we are. Here mm-hmm. I am.
But you got to Target. You found it.
I found Target, thankfully.
And we actually have a Target in town, which there was a big fight on letting that Target come in.
I heard.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about that? Was it just like...
Sure, because Davis was... Okay, when I got here in 1968. Mm-hmm. And Davis was much, 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 much smaller than it is now. Maybe 20,000, 25,000, something like that.
Okay.
During the time that I was here, a couple of things happened. People would say, okay, we wanted to put in a development. And then there'd be a discussion in the community about, okay, how many and how big and what's it going to be like and all this stuff. And Davis is a pretty a slow growth city.
Okay.
At least that was the intention. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, and I think it was probably the 80s when that happened, there was a developer, huge developer. He wanted to put in something that would like add a third again to the size of the city.
Okay.
And the city said, no, that's too big. That's too big. That we don't want to grow that fast because that would dilute the community that's here. Okay, so he did an end run around the city. He went to the county, and he got the county's permission mm-hmm. to make a development right outside the city limits, right next to the city, outside the city limits. So
okay.
that whole Mace Ranch development, the thing that you drove around with when you went around Covell,
yeah.
that entire area wasn't there until
wow.
he did that. And he snuck that. And the county said, sure, we'll stick it to Davis. What the heck?
So what year was this again?
This was in the 80s sometime, I think. I'll have to look up the history. I'm not real good on dates. I was here. I remember the things happening.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, there was this huge clump mm-hmm. of new residents that had absolutely nothing to do with Davis. They were commuters to Sacramento. Because it was on the east edge,
yeah.
and he built it and marketed it to that demographic,
wow.
and so slowly as the children from that area became part of the city and incorporated into the city activities and things. Slowly, those folks became more Davisites. But mm-hmm. for a long time, it was a very chopped off, disconcerted kind of thing. So mm-hmm. the other thing that happened is the city of Davis went to the county and went, what the heck is going on here? And they made an agreement with the county. It's called the pass-through agreement. So basically, the county promised never to do that again, and the city promised to give them money. Now, it's a little more complicated than that. If you go and look on in the history for the pass-through agreement.
Pass-through
agreement with the county, yeah. But anyway, so Davis grew giantly, and then since then there have been a couple of other developments that have gone in, like the one that's north of Covell there, up Poline Road.
Hospitals?
And then,
Poline. Okay,
Poline. And saying. Then the there used to be a cannery right there at Covell and the railroad track overcrossing. Mm-hmm. That overcrossing, by the way, was our first mountain.
First mountain?
Yeah, everything was flat, and uh-huh. you just drive up and stop and wait for the train to go by and keep going.
Oh, okay.
And so when they put that in, we called it Mount Davis.
Mount Davis.
Yeah. And if you look around, I mean, that's the only big lump that we have going over things, mm-hmm. except they added a couple on I-80. But anyway, so I'm diverting.
Well, I'm very glad. I'm happy to hear the history of Davis. Yeah. So you're saying before the,
Before the Mace Ranch development.
So before the 80s, yeah, uh-huh. exactly. There was no car dealerships. There's no El Macero neighborhood.
Oh, no. El Macero was a separate town.
Oh.
A separate community. It was part of the county. It was its own little El Macero Golf Club area. But it wasn't, it has its own zip code.
Okay.
It did at the time. Yeah. And then the car dealerships along the freeway, they were there.
They were there.
I mean, they've expanded, certainly. Yeah. But,
they're probably the only thing there back then.
No, it was a freeway off ramp. So there was like a little gas station and a Cindy's restaurant came probably in the 70s. Mm-hmm. The university was an agricultural school. A land grant college is the term that we're looking for here. And what it meant was in a land grant college, you were not allowed to sell liquor within 3 miles of the college because of the land grant requirement situations. So until the legislature passed a law that got rid of that, and that was probably around 83 or 84, something like that, you had to drive 3 miles at least to get liquor. So 3 miles from the edge of the university was just east of Mace, a few blocks. And so there were two liquor stores there to service the students. We had to drive out there. Or they'd go to Woodland, and on the south edge of Woodland, there was a Frenchie's liquor store. And this was because it was a land-grant college, and you couldn't have liquor within 3 miles. You couldn't sell it. Eventually, there were enough, you know, car wrecks and bad things happening that the people petitioned the state to change the law so that, and then now they sell liquor in grocery stores and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What do you mean by land grant?
Land grant college. It's a, you'll have to look it up. No, okay. Really. It's an old term, and most ag schools were land grant colleges, but and you'd meet, we don't have to do it now, but
oh no, I'm gonna write in my notes pass through and land grant so I can look it up later.
Sure. Or you could listen to our talk and then you could jot it down as you go too.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So back to you. So here you come. You came to Davis, you drove through there and all this agricultural wide open spaces. Mm-hmm. Do you have agoraphobia or something? Did you not like the wide open spaces or just you thought it was so different?
It was just so unfamiliar.
Uh huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think added to the fact that I moved out here alone.
Mm-hmm.
So probably, you know, a lot of
So you didn't
loneliness.
Know anybody
no.
when you got here. Wow.
I mean, I do have an uncle up in Rockland, but I didn't really mm-hmm. let him know that I was moving up here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now you found a place to live online. You got your sublet. Mm-hmm. You got 3 months to go in.
Yes.
You're now driving around looking at town, trying to go, ooh. what did you decide to do for work?
Oh, okay. Work.
I mean, well, obviously you must have gone to work or you wouldn't have money to pay the rent, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, I just went online as well, and or I printed out my resume.
You're very modern.
Yeah, Craigslist. Craigslist and Indeed.
Oh, really?
So I worked at the Office Max here for a little bit, maybe for a month. I also worked at the Nugget Markets. Maybe for 3 to 5 months, a little bit more. And then, well, now I work, as you saw me, I'm a behavioral aide for adults with developmental disabilities. So that's my current job.
Okay, so tell me the title of your job again.
I'm a behavioral aide.
Behavioral aide?
Yes.
To people with developmental disabilities?
Yes, adults, yes. Okay. 18 plus.
Okay, and is that private work? Is that through a government agency, or how does that work?
Through government, I believe.
And tell me about it, because this is fascinating. I've never had anybody on the show who talked about that before.
Yeah. So like we met, you know, my client, he was this radio station is one of his sites for volunteering. So it depends on your client. I'm assigned one-on-one to a client. So he's mine. I'm with him 30 hours a week.
Wow.
And basically, I just help him accomplish his goals and do the activities that he wants to do. And I manage his behavior.
So you're not like a job coach.
You're not a job coach.
And you're not a chauffeur. I mean, you're an assistant.
Kind of, yeah. Although when you said chauffeur and job coach, I feel like maybe I'm like a little bit of each one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess it depends on your specific client and what he wants to do. And it also depends on the staff member. For me and for him, he just wants to... His goal is eventually to work for money and eventually to go to college.
Wow.
And so we do a lot of volunteering during the week. We do here at the library. At the senior center as well, where I saw you.
Yeah, I saw you a couple days ago, week ago.
Yeah, well, last Monday.
And that person you were with was your client. He was wrapping up silverware for the lunch service.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he set the tables, and so we do that every Monday. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So in addition to doing volunteer things like that, do you also go with him if you're like going to a movie or hanging out at the library and reading, or I mean, what?
Yeah. So
is it specific activities that you do, or is it just a certain time that you're together and he decides what you're going to do that day, or?
Yeah. So I'll give you like a rundown of our schedule. For example, on a typical, let's say Wednesday. So yesterday, maybe between, so I start my day at 8:00. 8 through 9 p.m., we meet up. We go to Target because there's a little Starbucks cafe there. We meet up with other peers.
Okay, 8 a.m. or 8 p.m.?
8 a.m.
8 a.m.
So other staff members, other clients. Usually we would go out and exercise, but the weather is way too cold right now. Another thing I found very interesting about moving up here, it's way colder. Anyways.
Winter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Southern California, I just grab a hoodie.
Oh, well, here, yeah. San Diego is totally different. That's first of all, it's on the coast.
Yeah.
And that changes everything. And then it's so far south, so that your days never get quite as short.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so you go out and you would exercise, but you don't want to do it outside, so you did something else.
So during the wintertime, so my days, like, we go to Target, we meet up with other peers and clients. For the first hour, we either play board games or do different activities that we consider pure interaction. Yeah, because it's one of the only indoor places in Davis, because the library doesn't open until 10.
Right. On Monday, it's until 1.
Exactly, yeah. So, 8 to 9, we just do that in the little Starbucks cafe.
I see. So you got little tables there. Right.
Yeah, so we just do different activities there for the first hour of the day.
Carl's Jr. is another meeting place for folks who are socializing. There's
really?
A lot of the folks from the... Alcoholics Anonymous and those kinds of groups that get together for breakfast. I put that in quotes because it's like 2 hours of sitting and chatting.
Okay. They have it at Carl's. That's very interesting.
Hmm?
The Carl's Alcoholics Jr.? Anonymous. I thought they had it at the library.
Oh, they have meetings. Okay. But we're talking about the individuals socializing with each other, not a formal meeting.
I see, like a sponsor. Anyways.
No, just like going out and get together and see how Joe is doing and how what Mary's up to, and, you know, talk about the kids and whatever. Just a chit-chat, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which sounds to me like what you're talking about, get together and just hang out together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool.
Maybe we'll check out Carl's Jr. next time.
Well, yeah.
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 So yeah, that's 8 to 9. Mm-hmm. 9 to 10, me and my client, we head to campus because he plays piano.
Oh.
He wants to upkeep his piano skills. So we go to the music building.
Uh-huh.
Music building has these individual rooms, each with a piano in it, and they're free to use.
Okay, great. And they keep those better tuned than the public outside ones. Like there's a piano at the library, which is there all winter.
Yeah.
The piano, for example, downtown or at the co-op, they put them away for the winter because they're out in the air. I mean, are out in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
But the one in the library is tucked up underneath the, it's protected. So they keep that out there every winter. But it's not tuned as well as the.
Yeah, I think there's like keys missing too. It's all dirty and loose. And
Yeah. But it's public.
Yeah, so. True.
Yeah. Okay. So he goes and plays his piano.
Yes, he does. He's very good. I'm very impressed by his piano playing skills. And then so 10 o'clock is when the library opens. So we will go to the library.
Mm-hmm.
We might meditate in the car for five minutes before going to the library.
Mm-hmm.
Then usually we'll eat a snack at 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll have him do arts. So just coloring, drawing. And then 10:30 to 11:30 on a Wednesday, we would be here at the station.
Mm-hmm. alphabetizing, records, or doing something.
Yeah, so either filing the CDs away, which I think Doug has someone else doing it.
There's a number of volunteers.
Okay, yeah. So they put the labels on the CDs.
Mm-hmm.
They put the color, which indicates the genre, and then the artist name. And then we take that and we put it on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be hands-off, but it's a little bit difficult for him. So I just help him out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we are alphabetizing the vinyl records as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens to 11:30. 11:30, 12:30 is lunch.
Right, at the senior center. No? Or wherever.
On Mondays, I'm at the senior center, but usually I'm at the library. Or in the summer and spring, I'm outside at the park.
For lunch?
For lunch.
Oh, lunchtime. Okay. You do know that the county has a lunch program at the senior center at 11:30 every weekday.
Yeah,
and anybody can come.
Yeah, that's the one that we prepare for.
He prepares, he helps with that on Mondays. What I'm saying is the rest of the week, you could still go and get lunch there.
Very
good food.
I see.
Yeah.
I guess I could do that. But then
all of them could.
They recommended me, the staff members there, they recommended me I give a $7 donation, which I don't know if I can do.
Well, if you... it's optional.
I know.
It's optional.
Yeah.
So they ask for seniors, they ask $4, $4 or $5, and for non-senior assistants, helpers, they ask $4.
Mm-hmm.
And then for people just wandering in who are they ask $7. But there is no requirement. If someone out there listening doesn't have money, you can still eat. You can still eat. It's a county program. All you have to do is you have to register at least 24 hours ahead of time.
Yeah.
So this is a Thursday that we're on the radio. So if I were to call up now, I could not get lunch for tomorrow because it's already past lunchtime. But I could get Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, or I could say I'll be in every Thursday, or I could do, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And anybody can do that. So I encourage my listeners, eat.
Yeah, the food does smell good. I've never tasted it,
good.
But That smell good. And they do give away free bread, too.
Well, when he's done serving on Monday, you guys just sit down and eat. It's part of your volunteer effort. You don't have to pay. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll have to see, because I know he does have some food rules.
Mm-hmm. You know. Oh, right. I'm not saying that he would want to. I'm saying it is okay.
Yeah.
And the people who work there do get fed,
mm-hmm.
Assuming they wanted to.
Yeah.
So anyway, so do you stay together during lunch, or do you go off by yourself for an hour? Or?
Oh, no, we're together.
You're together.
Okay. I have to be with him at all times.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, we eat lunch together. And then after lunch on a Wednesday, let's see. For him, it's internet research. So one of his goals is to eventually go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So on Tuesday, I have him do book research. Wednesday, internet research. And Thursday, he can write me a report.
Mm-hmm.
So the topic changes every week. I think the topic this week, topic this week is the state of Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So internet research usually consists of him watching a YouTube documentary, just taking notes,
mm-hmm.
and then going on Wikipedia, taking notes. It's mm-hmm. just a process, book research, internet research, and then the next day, just write the report.
Mm-hmm.
That's a typical Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then I drop him off at home. That's you.
And there's my 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So this is a Thursday. Does that mean you had to adjust your schedule in order to get here? Because we're on at 1, and you're not done till 2 usually.
Yeah, so one of the things I do like about this job is that I can get time off,
mm-hmm.
like whenever. They're usually pretty chill about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just asked my boss if I can
mm-hmm.
get off at 12.
Gives you time.
Which is during lunch, and then I just gave Xiaoxi to another staff member, and the staff member will drop him off at home at 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, this is very interesting. And how many different clients do you have? Right now, just one?
For me, I have one.
Uh-huh.
All of us are assigned one-to-one.
Uh-huh.
I would say in our groups.
If I'm understanding correctly, mm-hmm. this is like a work week, Monday through Friday kind of thing, right?
Yeah, 8 to 2, Monday through Friday, okay. 30 hours a week.
And then you get your days off?
Yeah, weekends off, get holidays off. I get paid hourly, so I don't get paid for those holidays.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So 2 o'clock in the afternoon till 8 o'clock next morning, you're on your own. What kind of stuff do you like to do on your own?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So usually when I get off at 2, I eat and then I check the mail, whatever. It's 2 to 3 is like just relaxation time.
Mm-hmm.
3 to 5, I go work out, go to the gym on
mm-hmm.
campus.
Mm-hmm.
Play basketball. Mm-hmm. And then 5 to 6 is like another in between period, you know, wash up, eat. And then 6 to nighttime, it's usually whatever I have planned for that day.
Mm-hmm.
So I might, I might go to a 12 step program. I might meet up with a friend to meditate. I might, go out at night, you know, to some bars or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or like today, I have a guitar lesson, actually with my friend John, who works at the library.
Mm-hmm.
So it all depends. I have a bunch of things just planned out each week mm-hmm. or for each day.
So I don't hear any television watching.
No, I don't own a TV. I wish I was rich enough to own a TV and afford cable,
uh-huh.
but I'm not.
But you've got a phone.
I do have a phone.
So you can watch anything from TV on your phone.
You're right. I just have to find the right stream, right?
Yeah.
Streaming site.
And, if you look up the schedule and you go, oh, Rachel Maddow show, mm-hmm. I want to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she comes on at 9 o'clock Eastern time, which is 6 o'clock our time.
Okay.
So, 6 o'clock. And then they repeat it at 9 o'clock. It's a public PBS. No, it isn't. It's an MSNBC one. But anyway, if you go to the website, the MSNBC website, you can see yesterday's program for free right there. Just watch it.
Yeah.
So it's not, how shall I put that? Even if you don't have a TV, you can watch lots of programs. if you know what they are.
That's true.
Or check it out. Or yeah.
I do watch a lot of ESPN on YouTube. So you're right.
ESPN is what?
Sports.
Oh, sports. Okay.
So what they do, you're exactly right, is that they take, for what I watch, they take snippets of the show and they just post it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it would play on TV. They would take parts of it, cut it, and upload it to YouTube. So
you get the summary.
I guess technically I do watch TV, but on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, you know, technology's changing.
Yeah.
It's always changing.
It's scary.
Nah.
No, you don't think so?
Don't be scary. No.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's sometimes confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes astonishing. Scary is not a word I use a lot.
Mm.
I guess I'm...
You're courageous. You're brave.
I also don't live in L.A. or San Diego.
Okay.
I live in Davis, which is a pretty safe place. I mean, it's... You basically know what's going to happen in town. It's not a lot of surprises.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking right now that 20 years ago there was a police officer killed, and then last week there was a police officer killed.
Oh yeah.
That's a long time between shootings.
Yeah.
And sad that it happened, but
yeah.
But still, I mean, Davis is not high crime. Not high crime.
Yeah.
Or at least not high shooting crime.
Mm-hmm.
I have never wanted to live in a big city. I like walking down the street and looking at people and recognizing them. Now, that's not going to happen in Davis with all the college students. There's a lot of people I don't know. I mean, if anybody's younger than 30, I probably don't recognize them. But I've lived here since 1968 when I came to go to school, and I know most people. So it's comfortable.
Yeah.
It's nice. Like, go to farmer's market in the morning. You know, you can go and just shop, or you can just talk to people and never get out of there because you see everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You go to farmer's market some?
I've been a couple times. It's not something I regularly do.
Hmm.
I don't know why. I think I'm just busy during the times that it happens.
Saturday morning and Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I went last Saturday though.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool.
Yeah, I like the breakfast burritos. That's always a favorite of ours.
Cool.
And great produce. Really nice. You can get almost anything there. That's not true. Anything that grows in the area, and we grow a lot of stuff. So, yeah. Yeah.
So everything's locally grown.
Within reason. In other words, they might be somebody who drives up from Santa Cruz or drives down from the foothills or something, but it's going to be all Northern California stuff.
Mm.
Well, maybe somebody will come up from the lower Central Valley down San Joaquin Valley.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, pretty local. Pretty local.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Because you said you've never wanted to live in a big city. So
I'm not comfortable living in a big city, no.
Before Davis, were you in a city or a town or...
Okay, so do you know where Canada is?
Canada, yes.
Do you know where Chicago is?
Chicago?
Uh-huh.
Yes, Midwest?
Go from Chicago straight north.
Okay.
Just before you hit Canada, bounce back off just a few miles. That's the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Okay.
And it is mostly trees. And iron ore mines. And
iron ore?
Iron ore.
Or iron ore, okay.
Iron ore. And lots and lots and lots of little tiny lakes and mosquitoes as big as a cat and backwoods. So that's where I was as a kid. And then my dad worked in a paper mill up there. You know, you cut down trees and you turn it into paper.
Okay.
Yeah. And the company that owned that paper mill had bought one in Mexico, near Mexico City, and they wanted some workers from that mill in that's on the edge of Wisconsin and Michigan. And they wanted them to go down to Mexico City and help get that transformation into the new company. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad did that and took the family with him. So I spent 9 months in Mexico City as a child in sixth grade, came back. Then my mom decided, oh, well, they're opening another mill in California. We should move. So here we go. Drag the family out to California. There's a little place up the road from here called Anderson, California.
Okay.
It's just south of Redding. It's in the Central Valley, at the very upper end of Central Valley. And I moved there. The last 2 weeks of my eighth grade year was horrible.
It was horrible.
Because I had grown up in a place where I knew everybody. It's a small, tiny town, you know. Mm-hmm. And we were still kids hanging around in a bunch just doing kid things, you know. We wouldn't pair up and go mating dances or anything like that. It was all kid stuff. And then when you went into high school, ninth grade, then you paired up. And then when you graduated high school, you got married. And that's how the culture was back then. Well, mm-hmm. I left there before all that boy-girl, how you're supposed to do it, dating kinds of things.
Okay.
And I got here. They had not only been dating, they'd been going steady for 3 years. The same age. Mm-hmm. The culture in California was so much faster.
Yeah.
So much faster. And, you know, this was a while ago, too.
Yeah.
So I missed all of that. And I was really upset. I had to leave all my friends behind. I didn't know these new people. They totally weird, totally different, totally.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then I went to college, and the closest UC campus was Davis. I wanted to go to Berkeley, but my folks said, "Well, let's put you in Davis instead." Okay, sure, why not? So I came here in 68, and I have occasionally lived someplace else for a short time, but I always come back because I really like it. And this is home. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It is.
I like hearing your Davis story, your life story.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I got here, 1968 was my beginning of college. Well, 68, 69, 70, those were really politically active years. Not only was the Vietnam War going on then, the Women's Liberation Movement, which actually wasn't a movement, but people called it that. Lots of stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got here, it was just a real uproar and really, wow.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm here.
Yeah. I'm very curious about those times.
Well, there's a lot to be curious about. And I find a lot of people who talk about it, how shall I say, tweak the facts a little bit to support their premise. Even if you go and you watch, like, the television mm-hmm. program, the covering the events of what's going on. I've been at some of those events. Okay, here's an example. 1991. 1991 was the first Gulf War, and the U.S. invaded a country in the Middle East, and there was a bunch of folks who were saying we shouldn't be at war.
Mm-hmm.
Peace is what we should strive for. War's wrong. War is mm-hmm. always wrong. Violence is always wrong. And so we had a candlelight vigil in Central Park, and we went around the circle, and if people wanted to, they could talk to the other folks, you know, and tell their story. And I'm a pretty emotional person. So I was talking about my brother who'd been in Vietnam, my college friend who'd been killed in the war, and how basically war was wrong. But I'm an emotional person. So I'm talking in a calm and reasonable voice, but I've got tears streaming down my face. I was not one of the instigators. I was not one of the leaders, and I was not one of the people who did really good, inspiring talks. But because I cried, my face was the one that the TV crew put on the air. And they made it seem as though this was a bunch of hysterical people rather than what really happened. And There were several times where I would go to an event. Later on, I would watch the television thing of it, and they distorted it every single time. But if you just, if you hadn't been at the event and you just watched the TV, that's what you would think had happened. Yeah. So it's really hard to find out what happened without talking to people and talking to individuals about things. Yeah. A lot of it, I think a good reflection of what people were thinking and feeling is in the music. So if you listen to the folk singers in the late 60s and the early 70s and hear what their songs are saying, that's a pretty good reflection of what people were feeling. Back in the 70s, I was the distributor for women's music. I should tell you what women's music. Women's music is music made by women who are feminist in nature. That is to say, people who have not been, up until that time, were not taken seriously, were not in the normal mix of music. It was basically a boys' club at that point. And so some of the women who were singing and performing and writing and things, they said, let's just make a girls' club. So they didn't call it that, but there was a distribution network of women's music.
Okay.
And so I was the distributor here in Davis. And so I got to meet a lot of these really great performers. And you know, it was fun. It was
a distributor, really nice. Like you distributed their albums, their CDs to different radio
albums.
Stations,
there weren't CDs at that time. CDs didn't exist. Albums, and then, well, then I started the Davis Women's Books, which was a... You're getting my history here. You're getting my history. I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
I'm curious.
Okay. The Women's Center got started in about 70, and it was to promote women's concerns and recognize women's talents and things that were not being recognized at the time. And we had a conference, was the very first rape conference that I know about. It was at the university. And the Women's Center hosted it, invited people, and that was the topic. We wanted to get literature about that topic, and there wasn't anything in the mainstream press. Mm-hmm. The best thing we found was a pamphlet, I mean, maybe 12 pages or so. It was called Stop Rape Now, and it was produced in Michigan in this women's group back there in somebody's basement, and so it wasn't commercially made, and it wasn't commercially available, and so the Women's Center wanted to get some and have it at the conference for attendees, and was told, because they were part of the university, that they were not permitted to sell things because it would be competition for the university bookstore. They were not permitted to to get books and sell them because of that. So they went to the bookstore and said, okay, so we've got this conference up and we want some of these things. Would you please order them and then we'll sell them and get back what we don't buy? And they'd said, no, you have to buy them all ahead of time and you can't return them. Well, we didn't have that much money. So I was organizing the library at the Women's Center at the time. And I said, well, this is ridiculous. So I went and found a bookstore in Berkeley, a radical bookstore. And I ordered a box of books on the topic. Mm-hmm. And they shipped it up on the Greyhound. Now, at this point, we didn't have train service. So they shipped it up a box in the Greyhound. And I set up a table at the conference, and I had the books out so for people to sell. And then what we didn't use, we packed back up, and we shipped back down to the bookstore in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And that was how we got information out. We did order a bunch of things from that Stop Rape pamphlet. And then the extras we just kept in the library so that people could get them later. And basically circumvented the university bookstore weirdness.
Yeah.
And so I did that a few times. And then the books that were most frequently asked for, or people would come into the library wanting information, and there were two really good basic overviews of what we were talking about. One is called I'm Running Away from Home, But I'm Not Allowed to Cross the Street. Excellent book. Women who read that would go, oh, yeah, I know what she's talking about. I felt like that. You know, it's the perfect thing to give to your Aunt May, who has nothing to do with feminism, but will recognize this. And then for the men, there was Jean Marine's book called A Male Guide to Women's Liberation. An excellent book. And he explains what's going on and what things happen. And the guys that read it would go, oh, yeah, I recognize that. And it was really interesting to talk to, because when I had the bookstore, I would talk to people and I would find out what made it logical and understandable for them. Yeah. So these two books were the best things. And so at the library, I would keep recommending those. And at some point, people said, oh, too bad you don't have some. So I just said, okay, I'll order a bunch of books from that Berkeley store.
Yeah.
I'll keep them in my house. So I had a little bookstore in my house.
Wow.
Yeah. Just a few shelves, not a lot of stuff, but a little bit. Yeah. And then eventually a friend of mine said, you really have to make this public. You really have to have a storefront. Here's my life savings. And I have found a place for you to be, and I will pay for the first 3 months' rent. And you will have a bookstore, Lois. And I went, okay, I guess I'm having a bookstore.
Yeah.
So we did. And we had a bookstore right across from campus. And
really? Okay.
Yeah, in the 70s. And for several years, it was there. Where the bike path comes off of A Street, it's 3rd coming off of A Street. I mean, off of campus crosses A Street.
Yeah, A Street.
Yeah.
And then
There's a building there which at the time had like 6 little storefronts in it. Now it's a restaurant or bakery or something. Maybe it's a pub. I don't know. But anyway, at that point, there was this little... It was probably as wide as this studio and twice as long. So it wasn't big, but it was there. And we made enough money to pay the rent and pay the phone bill and keep the lights on. None of us took payment. I mean, we didn't have salaries or anything, but it was there and it was in existence, and it was fun. I got to do a lot of stuff. It was really
that sounds very cool.
It was, and you know, I had all the feminist books that were not publicly or commercially available, and then as things did come out, I added more things, and then I like science fiction, so I had my favorite science fiction, and then I had the women's music, and then local artists, so the local poets and writers and things. If somebody lived in Davis, I tried to keep one or two of their books there, and then most of it was, I could additionally do special orders. So someone would want a book, they would prepay, we'd fill it out, and it'd be shipped to them. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that lasted until probably about 76.
Okay.
And that's because I started fighting forest fires. And since I was going to be gone during the summer and the students who had been helping out were moving and graduating and stuff. And by that time, the university bookstore had started carrying more mainstream. There was more mainstream stuff written. And so they were taking a lot of that load. And another bookstore opened in downtown that also was, you know, the local radical bookstore.
You fought forest fires?
Yeah. I was one of the first women crew leaders for fighting forest fires.
Okay.
You know, go march through the forest and
water it down and
forest, you don't water it down.
Okay, no. So yeah, the whole you're a firefighter.
Oh, I was definitely, yeah. No, we were hand crew, so you had Pulaskis, which are our chopping tools, and shovels and rakes, and there were 20 of you would hike on out and try and make a line between the burnt part and the part you don't want to burn, and yeah. That's a whole nother story.
Wow. So you put out the fires.
No. You created a break
created a
so
break.
That when the fire burned up to it, it didn't cross over. So it stopped.
It's like preventative.
No. When there's a fire happening.
Yeah.
I mean, you're...
Or like...
Okay. You're from a city.
Yeah.
But imagine the biggest park you can imagine in your city. Okay. Full of trees.
Yeah.
And on the east side, it's burning. And it's moving. And the fire is just moving over as it goes. Mm-hmm. Well, if I can draw a line down the middle and get that down to bare dirt so there's nothing to burn, then when the fire gets there, it has nothing to burn and it'll burn itself out.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Now, when you're talking grasslands, you know, grass burns really fast. It's gone. It doesn't keep going. Mm-hmm. So sometimes with a grass fire, you can literally draw a line with water and make the grass wet so it won't burn, and the fire is so fast and so quick that it would just stop. Doesn't happen when you've got bigger fuel. If you've got bushes, you've got trees, whatever. Well, and then a tree is a big thing. So what happens if there's a dead tree just inside the line that you just drew, and it's in the burning part, and it catches on fire and falls across the line? Well, now you got fire on the other side and you've lost it. So we had, sometimes we would have a sawyer attached to us. It's a person carrying a big old chainsaw. And they would cut any dead trees that were close to the line. They would cut them back into the burn so that they were lying down, so that when the fire came, it could burn that, but it wouldn't fall over and cross the line. So anyway, there's a lot to learn and a lot to do. And when you're talking about being out in the wilderness areas or in really rugged terrain where you're not going to drive a bulldozer and just bulldoze a line, then you need bodies to do it. So the Forest Service hires summer people, and it's called an AD crew, and it's just... You do your normal thing during the summer, and if you get a call, then the individual says, yes or no, will I go or not for this particular fire? And then you get together, you have three squads of six each, and then you have a crew leader, so that's 19, and then you have a liaison for the Forest Service that goes with your crew, and so that's 20 people. And so those units of 20 people are going to be assigned on a particular fire in this place or that place or doing this task or whatever. So you're out there fighting, following instructions, and the details are you have to learn how to do, but the overarching planning is done by professionals. So, yeah. So 6 summers I fought forest fires. The last 4 I was crew leader.
Wow.
And then at age 29, I decided that I needed to retire because I worked all summer, and at the end of summer, I had pulled a hamstring for no apparent reason. There was no injury. There was no activity that I did that I said, that's what I did wrong.
Yeah.
I was in the best shape I'd ever been in, and it just went out. And I thought,
that's weird.
You know? If that could happen, then maybe I should find some other line of work.
Yeah.
And so I retired and did something else. I didn't retire. I just stopped fighting forest fires.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're learning more about me than I am about you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
We're equal, so, right?
Yeah. Are you planning to stay in Davis? Are you liking enough that this is going to be permanent, or is this still temporary in your head?
I am still thinking about it. My current lease goes up until August.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I still have until then to decide.
Mm-hmm.
I probably will sit down in the next couple of weeks to really think about it because it is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know yet. But if I stay, then wherever I go, I'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know
what I mean? Well, that's 8 months away still.
Yeah.
When I changed jobs at one point, I went through a process of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I was lucky. I had enough comp time build up that I was being paid for the next 3 months because I had done so much overtime, but they weren't paying overtime. So it was, they did what they call comp time. So, yeah. Anyway, then when they restructured and I ended up not being in a job, suddenly I had 3 months of free time, but paid. So I didn't have to rush.
Yeah.
And so I went through, I made lists. I made a list of every job I'd ever done, paid or unpaid, and what I liked and disliked about it. And then I made a list of everything that I like to do or might like to do. I mean, kitten petting was high on that list. That was,
Kitten petting?
Kitten petting. Petting kittens.
You got paid for that?
No.
Oh.
This is my, I like doing these things. This is my list of things I like to do. Yeah. Whether or not they're viable.
Yeah.
And then I put down a list of things I had discovered about myself and that I didn't like. So one of the things I didn't like was being in a building with no windows. So working in an office with no windows.
Yeah.
You know, that just, no. I liked being outside, but I didn't have to be outside all the time, you know. And so I made all these lists, and then I went, and that was great, because I learned a lot about myself by just making these lists and thinking about it. And then I went and I looked at the newspaper, and I tried to imagine what all of the jobs would be that were listed, just to see, you know, what does that job entail that I might like or I might dislike? Okay, and I did all that. Then I thought, you know, I have figured out things I'd like to do. Why don't I just write down everything I would like to do and see if I can come up with a job that encompasses all of that? And I ended up starting my own business called The Organizer. And because I like to do this and I like to do this and I like to, but I didn't want to do any of them 40 hours a week. So if I have different clients at different times, okay, well, then I can be doing different things. I like the challenge of figuring out what's wrong and how to solve a problem. So problem solving would be a great thing to do. And so I ended up starting a business where I offered my services to people to either, you know, play secretary once a month for them, or help them go through their papers and write their memoirs, or just all these different things. And I made up a thing, and I did it, and that was me from 1980 till I retired in 2015.
Yeah. I can't say bad words, huh?
You better not.
Okay. Well, I was going to say that's pretty bad.
It's bad. It's good.
It's like a bad but. Anyways, that's really cool. Really awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're almost out of time, so I got to say goodbye. Thank you for being with Tyler Lee. And bye-bye, everybody.